and make America great again.
Make America great again.
Make America great again.
And we will make America great again.
Ronald Reagan for president. Let's make America great again.
Ronald Reagan is considered by some to be the greatest president in the history of the United States. I've always understood that to mean that people loved his version of supply-side economics, also known as trickle-down economics. Tax the rich less, and the benefits would trickle down to all of society. That's just basic economics. Well, turns out, no it's not, and also Reagan's trickle-down theory is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the many theories and agendas that Reagan pushed during his administration. Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980. The 8 years that followed ushered in not only the largest redistribution of wealth in a generation, but also the termination of welfare benefits for thousands of Americans, a dramatic rollback of unions and labor organizing, and an infiltration of Christian fundamentalism into American government, the consequences of which we are still very much feeling to this day. Ronald Reagan walked so that Donald Trump could run, and he altered the American way of life for everyone but the top 1%. 40 years after first being elected president, the myth of Ronald Reagan still lives on in the minds of people who are too deluded to see that the American dream Reagan stood for is the same American dream he irreversibly decimated during his time as president. This is how Reagan ruined everything. Before I get into all the ways that Reagan royally screwed us over, I want to take a minute to thank my partner on today's video, Hungry Root. Hungry Root is an online grocery service that makes it super easy to eat healthy, personalized meals. All you gotta do is tell them a little bit about yourself through a short, fun little quiz, including any dietary restrictions, any goals you have, like eating healthier or reducing food waste, plus your favorite flavors and foods, and then Hungry Root will send you fresh groceries and simple recipes right to your door every week. And you all already know how much I hate cooking and grocery shopping, so Hungry Root makes my life so much easier. Hungry Root is different because the recipes they send are seriously so simple. I'm talking like 10 minutes tops. Love this for me! And it is the most easily customizable grocery or meal service I've ever tried. Can't eat gluten? They gotcha. Vegetarian? Totally cool. No dairy? No problem. You get the picture. You can edit your weekly deliveries and choose exactly what you want to receive, or you can let Hungry Root choose for you. I always let Hungry Root choose for me because, listen, I run my own business, I'm making choices all day long. It is such a relief to just be able to say, hey, Hungry Root, here's what I like, here's what I don't like. Please just send me food. And once you get your groceries, you can just mix and match what they've sent you, or you can follow the easy recipes they send. And the more you use Hungry Root, the better it gets at its personal recommendations for you, which I love. I've been getting Hungry Root for a while now, and it's so nice to get exactly what I want because Hungry Root knows me, you know? And it seriously has saved me so much time in grocery shopping and meal prep. Plus, you never get bored because there are over 2,000 recipes to discover and a wide variety of options for all diets. Plus, they send snacks and breakfast options too, so you get all your bases covered with Hungry Root. Hungry Root has a very special offer for my viewers. The first 100 people to use my promo code LEJA40 will get 40% off their first order of Hungry Root. Click the link down below. Thanks, Hungry Root. To say that our current levels of economic inequality and political instability are the result of a single man is hyperbolic at best, and frankly gives Reagan more credit than he deserves. Our system was fucked enough to produce and support a man like Reagan as president. He didn't just appear out of thin air. But it is hard to pinpoint another president that has had such enduring and wide-ranging negative impacts on the American way of life. I'm gonna unpack Reagan's impact by focusing on who and what he hurt, namely the middle class, minorities, and democracy. Starting with the middle class, let's talk about what Reagan is most known for, Reaganomics, a theory of supply-side economics that says that by removing regulations on businesses and lowering their taxes, they would be able to be more productive, have more freedom to be agile in the market, and that growth would then translate to more jobs and higher wages for workers. The wealth would start at the top and it would trickle down to everyone. When Reagan took office, the US was going through what was called stagflation, where both inflation and unemployment rates were high. The country was in the worst recession since the Great Depression at the time. Because of this, people were primed for major economic change, and Reagan ushered usher in that change. After the Great Depression, the New Deal came with huge amounts of government spending on everything from mortgage financing for whites only, more on that in my last video on housing segregation, to job creation, to building infrastructure, and these government programs were popular because they did grow the economy and create jobs and build a large, thriving middle class in America. Minimum wages stayed consistent with productivity. The more productive the average worker was, the more the minimum wage increased. That connection was broken, however, as the US tax code began moving away from the New Deal. Reagan wasn't the sole president responsible for creating tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, but he sure did it with the most gusto and to the largest degree. Before Reagan's presidency, income tax on the wealthiest Americans, that's the money that they had to pay to the government as a proportion of how much they made each year, was at 70%. So above a certain threshold, the wealthiest Americans had to pay 70% of their income to the government. By the end of Reagan's presidency, that number dropped to 28%. He also created major tax breaks for corporations and estates, all in the name of creating smaller government and putting more money in the hands of the wealthiest people and companies in the country. Some of the effects of his economic policies in the short term were positive. The period of stagflation became less pronounced, inflation and unemployment both decreased, but those numbers belie the fact that the connection between wealth and productivity was severed, and the rich got richer while the poor and middle class saw very little economic progress during this time. The incomes of the lowest 90% rose by 17%, while those of the top 10% rose by 106%. Talk about a trickle. In the years since Reagan's presidency, that gap between rich and poor has continued to widen. Today, the top 10% of income earners in the US hold 72% of the total wealth, and the bottom half of income earners, the 50% of the American population, holds 2% of the wealth. Between 1978 and 2021, average worker compensation increased 18.1%. The top CEO compensation increased 1,460% in that same time period. In 1980, the average CEO earned 36 times more money than the average worker, and today the average CEO earns 400 times more. The wealthiest have never been wealthier, while for the average worker, wages haven't even kept up with inflation. This shit ain't trickling, Ronnie. What now? And it's not like at the time Reagan implemented trickle-down economics in the early 80s that it was this brand new, newfangled invention that everyone was optimistic about. A lot of people were like, hey, this is really gonna hurt poor people. But Ronnie was convinced by his neoliberal economic pals that keeping the wealthiest people happy will mean prosperity for all. Because Ronald Reagan was convinced that the American dream was alive and well. And the common theme through all of his policy choices was that individuals are the creators of their own destiny, that anyone could pick themselves up by their bootstraps if they really wanted to, and that any struggling was simply a moral failure on the part of the individual, and not a failing on the part of the system that stood on their necks. And it was through Reagan that this idea that the government is your enemy and stands in the way of your freedom and prosperity really took hold in the Republican consciousness writ large, to the point that working and middle class people voted to re-elect him, even though it was actively against their own best interest to do so. Sound familiar? This was clear in his trickle-down economic policy, but it was also clear in his stance on labor rights. The 20th century saw a peak in labor unions, especially in the 40s and 50s, when over one-third of all workers in the US were members of a union. Unions were strong and could mount strong challenges against employers, and they brought about important labor laws like the 8-hour workday, minimum wage, child labor laws, and civil rights laws in the 1960s. During this period, Ronald Reagan himself was the president of the Screen Actors Guild, a labor union for actors. At some point in the 50s, Ronald flipped from Democrat to Republican. He claimed it was because his party, the Democrats, failed him. It could also be that while he was president of the Screen Actors Guild, he granted a rare waiver to MCA, his own talent agency, to allow them to start producing television shows. They needed a waiver because it was a real conflict of interest when the people who manage talent become the people who also hire the talent. You see, after that waiver was granted, Reagan conveniently was given a cushy TV job through MCA that paid him $125,000 per year in 1950s money, and he became a walking spokesman for GE, an influencer before there were influencers. The FBI eventually investigated MCA and the waiver granted to them by the Screen Actors Guild, including Reagan, for anti-competitive behavior. Nothing came of the probe for Reagan, though MCA was forced to break up. It was around this time that Reagan conveniently was like, you know what? Fuck unions. Fuck the government. Too many regulations. I'm a Republican now. Interesting. But he, of course, used his history as a Union president to his advantage while running for governor of California and later for United States president, pointing out that he was the only candidate who's actually been president of a labor union in order to win over the working class white vote. Convenient.
Where free unions and collective bargaining are forbidden, freedom is lost.
And a lot of them voted for him, which was against their self-interest, and that was made abundantly clear not long into his presidency when, in 1981, PATCO, the Air Traffic Controllers Union, went on strike to demand better working conditions and increased pay. See, the problem with this is that the workers were technically federal employees, and it was against the law for federal employees to strike. Roughly half of all U.S. flights were grounded during the strike, and Reagan held a press conference on the matter and made his stance very clear.
And if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
And then, 2 days later, 12,000 federal air traffic controllers lost their jobs and were barred from ever working for the federal government again. It was a show of strength that debilitated the organized labor movement, and it hasn't recovered since. Where at its peak, union membership accounted for over a third of all workers in the United States, by the end of Reagan's presidency, that number was cut in half. Today, union membership accounts for roughly 10% of all workers, which is a historic low. The reason for this dramatic decrease in union members is twofold. One, Reagan's firing of the air traffic controller sent a strong message to the private sector that union busting is fair game. And two, Reagan appointed his own cronies to head the National Labor Relations Board, the federal board that oversees unions. And they worked to loosen regulations on businesses and let them get away with, like, nearly whatever they wanted. And the suppression of the labor movement is shown in the numbers, not only in the dwindling number of union members, but also in the dramatic decrease in strikes, a common tool used by unions to counteract the power imbalance between workers and corporations. Prior to 1979, there were, on average, between 200 and 400 large-scale labor strikes on any given year. There were 187 in 1980. By 1989, there were 40. And in 2017, there were 7. Even the recent stirrings we've seen to unionize Amazon facilities, Starbucks coffee shops, and recently the first unionized strip club pales in comparison to the power of the labor unions in the middle of the 20th century that helped shift the balance of power away from the large corporations, who had all the money and all the bargaining chips, into the hands of workers. For example, my experience, having worked numerous jobs in the 21st century, is that companies treat you like they're doing you a favor by giving you a job. Like, you should be so lucky. And, like, you have to show loyalty to the company above all else, otherwise you're a bad worker. They pay you what they want, they fire you whenever they want, and they do not have to give one flying fart about you because you are replaceable to them. They hold all the power. You want a job? Take it or leave it. Most of them don't even list the pay range on their job postings unless they're legally required to. And if you were to ask for the pay range up front before putting in the effort to apply for the job, well, you might as well just not apply for the job because no hiring manager is going to look favorably on that. You're supposed to want the job because you're passionate about widgets and working for that company. Doing a job for money is not the team player attitude that we're looking for. Not to mention the fact that HR exists to keep the company from getting sued, not to protect your interests. So you can see how unions are so powerful because it's only through collective bargaining and organizing that workers can balance out the power with their employers. Okay, sorry, I needed to go down that labor organizing tangent, but it really can't be overstated the devastating impact of the Reagan administration on workers' rights and workers' income. This combination, the huge tax cuts for the wealthy and the busting of unions, absolutely decimated the middle class and concentrated the power and money in the hands of big business and the top 10%. But it wasn't just the middle class he was coming after. Before taking office, Reagan ran for president in 1976 and lost the Republican nomination to incumbent Gerald Ford. During that first presidential run, Reagan was touting the failures of big government and discussing what he claimed was rampant abuse of the country's welfare system. And he kept coming back to this same story.
In Chicago, they found a woman who holds the record. She used 80 names, 30 addresses, 15 telephone numbers to collect food stamps, Social Security, veterans' benefits for four non-existent deceased veterans' husbands, as well as welfare. Her tax-free cash income alone has been running $150,000 a year.
The welfare queen. You know her. You love her. She's a scam artist. She's having babies just to make more money from the government. She's a liar. She's a cheat. She's sucking the system dry. She's black and she's everywhere. boo. In reality, this story Reagan kept telling out of Chicago was about a woman named Linda Taylor. Her crimes were many. She was a scam artist. She was tried and convicted of welfare fraud, but the total they could prove she ever defrauded the government for was $8,000. Not $150,000 per year. Nor was she an accurate example of welfare recipients, because most welfare recipients were, and are, white people. An uncomfortable truth that detractors don't want to face. Nor is there any shame in benefiting from that system. I've benefited from food stamps, unemployment, and veterans benefits numerous times throughout my childhood and adult life. In fact, in many states, welfare benefits are actually underutilized due to how difficult it is to get signed up for them and to stay signed up for them. Also, most people who defraud the welfare system are men. But Linda Taylor became the welfare queen, a scapegoat for Republicans to use as they blamed black people for what white supremacy did to them while also decimating public safety net programs. And it's a trope that persists to this day, though usually only in veiled terms and dog whistles. And black women and welfare recipients weren't the only minorities hurt during the Reagan administration. Nancy and Ronnie were also big proponents of Just Say No and the beginning of the war on drugs. Drug users were another convenient scapegoat, and Reagan was responsible for slashing government programs that would have helped people get housed, get clean, or receive the mental health support they needed. And instead he was like, nah, just throw those guys in jail. And more people were also becoming unhoused because of the dramatic tax cuts for the wealthy and decrease in public safety net programs. And being unhoused or doing drugs were seen by Reagan and his supporters not as failures of a system meant to protect and lift up its people, but instead a moral failure of the individual. You're an addict because you decided to do drugs, and that's the only reason. You're unhoused because you're lazy and you won't just apply for a job. This has nothing to do with our policies or the changes we're creating in society. That's a separate issue. This is solely your responsibility and your fault for not lifting yourself up by your bootstraps. And you know who else didn't bootstrap themselves enough? The gays. Oh, you thought the gays weren't part of this? Think again. Ever heard of a little thing called AIDS? Yeah, well, it was fucking rampant in the 80s. It started in the 70s, but no one really knew what it was, and by 1981, at the start of Reagan's presidency, it was becoming an epidemic.
Among the early researchers looking for both a cause and a cure was Dr. Anthony Fauci.
The plan is to put into clinical trials individuals who have full-blown AIDS.
Hundreds and then thousands and then tens of thousands of Americans were dying of it. And Reagan said nothing. The president of the United States said absolutely nothing for years, because this was a disease of gay people and drug users, two groups that decidedly were not constituents who voted for Reagan. People who mattered so little to him that a disease that was associated with them and killing thousands of Americans remained on his periphery until it wasn't. Rock Hudson was a major film star in the mid-20th century at the same time Reagan was still pursuing his acting career. Rock Hudson and the Reagans were friends. Rock Hudson was also gay. Rock Hudson was also the first major celebrity to die of AIDS-related complications in 1985. It took the death of a friend for Reagan to even give a shit about this disease that was killing thousands on his watch. And it would take him 2 more years before he even acknowledged the disease in an official press conference in 1987. By that time, over 30,000 people had contracted the disease, and 20,000 people had died in the US alone. But again, even after he finally acknowledged the AIDS epidemic for what it was, he was reluctant to acknowledge it again. Funding for AIDS research under Reagan was slow to come, and it's unclear how the trajectory of the AIDS epidemic would have been different if Reagan had acknowledged it for what it was, a deadly and unknown disease that was killing thousands of Americans, regardless of sexuality or drug use. Instead, it remained on the fringes of his presidency for years, because again, in the tidy imagination of his ideal American vision, you are the product of your own actions. You have only yourself to blame. You did gay sex. You injected drugs. Just bootstrap yourself out of AIDS. In this way, Reagan was able to disconnect his policies from the outcomes of his policies. It's the moral failure of individuals, not anything he's done. It's one of the reasons that he's known as the Teflon president. Despite his many failures, and despite the many ways in which he was an incredibly imperfect president, he managed to avoid the reputational damage that most presidents experience and come out the other side as this mythical hero that Republicans still revere to this day. And nothing made more clear Reagan's lasting negative impact on our democracy like the presidency of Donald Trump. In both Donald Trump and Ronald Reagan, we had presidents who were also master showmen. And Reagan really introduced what Trump has seemed to perfect, manipulating the media to his advantage and using dog whistles to ignite his base of supporters. Nancy and Ronald Reagan were both actors before entering the White House. And Ronnie's abilities in front of the camera, his abilities to deliver a line, and his ability to provide a convincing song and dance routine came in handy time and again throughout his presidency. In the Reagans, the media finally had this showy, easily televised president they'd always dreamed of. The Reagans were always ready for a photo op because they understood the power of pictures. They understood that pictures often conveyed a stronger message than what was being said or going on behind the scenes. Sure, we're slashing your benefits, kowtowing to big business, and rubbing elbows with rich people during the worst recession since the Great Depression, but we're also just like you. We're sunshiny and pleasant. We live on a ranch. We're just a couple of cowboys. Reagan was able to use his acting experience to follow the scripts that were given to him, to position himself as folksy and all-American, and to build himself and his vision of America into this myth that still persists today. All the while, Reagan was able to use the media during his campaign for presidency and when he reached the White House to drop dog whistles for his supporters, who were almost entirely white. And he was really the first person to perfect the dog whistle and use it to his political advantage. For example, he believed in the ultimate right of the individual, the right of the individual to own property and to do what he wanted with that property, including excluding whoever he wants from that property. Wink. He believes in states' rights. Wink. And he warned his supporters of the increased dangers in our cities, of welfare queens, and of a need for increased law and order to quell the, and I quote, jungle paths taking root throughout the country. Yikes. He was sunshiny and folksy, but in the end, Reagan was able to capitalize on what Trump later perfected. Fear. Fear of economic instability and fear of racial unrest. All the while fanning the flame of both issues and actively working against the best interest of the base that he is actively fear-mongering. And the final way that Reagan managed to undermine our democracy using a tactic that Trump later perfected was by aligning himself and the Republican Party with white evangelical Christians. The Christian right presented themselves as an opportunity for Reagan. They aligned on many of the same social issues, like abortion and tax cuts, and especially the idea of the individual's responsibility for their own fate that bootstrapping ideology that Reagan clung to. If you need welfare, it's because you're lazy and you should just get a job. If you don't want to go to hell, you're a sinner and it's up to you to get into heaven. Any moral failure and it's straight to the bowels of hell for you. Not only that, but it turns out the evangelicals have a lot of money. One group of the religious right that had particular sway was called the Moral Majority. It fought against abortion, the Equal Rights Amendment, and in favor of the family and traditional family values. It was founded in the 70s as a response to counterculture and the gay rights and women's rights movements of the previous decades, and it had a powerful lobbying arm. The Moral Majority is credited with helping Reagan win the 1980 presidential election. It was through the Moral Majority and Christian fundamentalists that Reagan was able to find a strong and fervent base of supporters. So it was, of course, in his best interest to make religion take a center stage in his politics. At the 1984 Republican convention, Reagan addressed a group of Christians saying, "The truth is, politics and morality are inseparable. And as morality's foundation is religion, religion and politics are necessarily related." He concluded, "If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under." So much for separation of church and state, am I right? And it was a tactic that worked. It brought more blue-collar and working-class people behind him, and it increased his appeal in the South, a place where his 1980 presidential rival Jimmy Carter typically held favor as the hometown hero. And this allegiance that Reagan struck with the white Christians has stuck to this day. And it was this same base that Trump was able to tap into to win, despite the fact that he's not religious, despite the fact that he actively worked against the best interests of the blue-collar and working-class people who voted for him, largely because of the ideals he espoused and dog whistles he used to appeal to that base. And it's that link between the Republican Party and evangelicals that has led to the rise of Christian nationalists, to the increase in hateful legislation aimed at trans kids and drag queens, to the dismantling of Roe v. Wade, to the banning of critical race theory and books that present any ideas contrary to the conservative Christian nationalist worldview. Over and over again, Reagan did what he had to do to cement power for himself and his rich and powerful supporters. Whether it was cutting taxes, busting unions, Indians or leaning into racist stereotypes and dog whistles, he did whatever he had to do to get what he wanted. His incredibly short-sighted policies and actions while in the White House led to increased economic and social division in America, to a growing distrust between Democrats and Republicans, and to the growth of a strong but small faction of radical conservatives who are using fear-mongering and capitalizing on what divides us in order to further erode our democracy. No, you can't pin everything that's happening in America today onto one man. But I double dog dare you to find a person or a president who is more culpable for the current social, political, and economic instability than President Ronald Reagan. And I haven't even touched on his stance on communism. Stay tuned for next week when I answer the question, why are Americans so obsessed with communism? For now, check out my latest video all about why America is still segregated. Thanks so much for watching. Have a good day. Bye-bye.